Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Public forum.
Public forum is an opportunity for the public to get up and speak about anything they'd like to discuss.
Amendment 4, there's some language that is in question to some people, and one of the things in that language is called viable. Viable means that it can live outside of the womb, in case you don't know what viable means, okay? So no babies are being taken. If they can breathe life, then they're viable.
Okay, Amendment 4 is one of the six amendments that we have on the ballot this fall for the state of Florida, and that's one that has to do with abortion. It's very misleadingly titled, avoiding government interference in abortion or whatever the exact language is, very close to that. And this is a person, Stanley Gray, Alan's a good friend, not Alan Gray, Stanley Gray, who shows up and he believes that the people who are opposed to Amendment 4 have been lying about Amendment 4. And he says that no babies who are viable could ever be taken in a late-term abortion, is what he's talking about here, third trimester abortion, under Amendment 4. He's just wrong about that. I mean, the amendment itself specifically gives you two protections. The first protection is all the way until viability, which is not defined in the amendment. So that itself is a relatively nebulous phrase. It's not that it's not got any parameters at all. We have some concepts of viability, but the clear line of what constitutes viability or not is very difficult to identify. It's a range, okay? The second thing, and this is very important, is or when, quote, necessary to protect the patient's health, comma, as determined by the patient's health care provider, end quote. Meaning, up until any point during pregnancy, as long as some undefined health care provider, not necessarily a doctor or even a nurse, but again, this very ambiguous phrase, health care provider, and patient's health, not life, but health, and of course, health could include a lot of things, including even mental health. And so, if Stanley Gray were himself being accurate about this, this will protect a woman from any government regulation that might be viewed as interference, because that's what the amendment says, all the way through viability, wherever that is, and anytime after viability. As in, the infant could survive, the baby could survive, if it's deemed necessary to protect the woman's health, whatever that is, as determined by the patient's healthcare provider, whoever that is. And so he's just wrong in saying that this would never allow the taking of an actual life of a child. But then he goes on.
A healthcare provider is a licensed practitioner. A licensed practitioner is the only ones that can provide healthcare.
How do you know that? That's not been clarified. That hasn't been litigated. That's not guaranteed by the amendment. The amendment is very deliberately vague because the people who advocate for this amendment want it to be as expansive as possible.
And finally, the last thing there is the legislature says that minors cannot receive healthcare without the consent of parents or guardians. In the amendment, it quotes that, as well as saying that this amendment does not change that law. The opponents of this amendment have been lying about it.
Yeah, also incorrect. What the actual ballot measure says is that this amendment does not change the legislature's constitutional authority to require, and this is the key word, notification to a parent or guardian before a minor has an abortion. That's not the same as consent. Notification and consent are not identical. So it's not the opponents of Amendment 4 who have been lying. And I don't usually love to call out members of the public who just show up at a public forum to offer a view, but it is the advocates, and in this case, Stanley Gray, who is lying about this. Because there is no guarantee on the protection of consent requirements, which is the law right now. There's also, a 24-hour separation period between your first and your second consultation right now. So he's just wrong about what the amendment would protect or what it would prevent. Now, it would not change the legislature's current requirement of notification, but notification is not consent. Now, some have argued, and I want to be fully fair about this, some have argued that because the parent would have to sign that they were notified or that there would have to be some validation that they were notified, that's the same as requiring consent. Well, if it were the same as requiring consent, then the amendment would say consent. It doesn't. They're not the same. And when this gets litigated, somebody, whatever a healthcare provider is, called a house and Sally Jones answers, we're getting ready to give your daughter, your 15-year-old, an abortion. What? Click. I mean, you notified, right? That's not consent, but that is notification. So the discussion about this amendment, this, again, in the Santa Rosa County Commission meeting yesterday, because the reason this came up is because they were going to have a vote on basically a disapproval, a disagreement. They were going to vote that they don't support Amendment Number 4, which has kind of become a thing in some of these counties. But I do want to give Stanley his final comments because there's going to be a lot more conversation about this. But one of the things with early voting and mail-in voting and, you know, having an election that's still almost a month away is when people make these decisions is anybody's guess. You know, could be today, could be 4 weeks from now, as it would be for me, because I like to vote on election day. So when do you talk about these issues? Well, it used to be simple. We'd talk about them within the last 2 weeks before the election. Now it's like, well, I got to already have this stuff on the mind. So, okay, final thought. And we've also heard this from other advocates having to do with who should be able to regulate the practice of abortion. Primarily, should men have any say on whether abortion is legal since it is a procedure performed upon women, right? Okay, here's what Stanley says.
When you go to a healthcare provider, you have to fill out a form. And on that form, you're listing all the things that you, as an individual, have wrong with you or had wrong with you. And there's a section on there. It says, for women only. Now, men cannot fill that part out, can they? Anybody know why? Because it doesn't apply. Amendment 4 does not apply to the men. But Amendment 4 is giving everybody in Florida the choice. Men shouldn't have that choice.
Okay, it's an old argument. It's the argument that men shouldn't have any say politically in the regulation of a healthcare decision that is made by women about their bodies, right? I'll just give him his final comment on this just before we, you know, criticize.
Think about your choice when you go out and vote on Amendment 4, because it really belongs to the women, not to the men.
Okay, lots of ways to respond to this. I heard a similar argument being made at the Escambia County Commission by somebody who, how dare they? How dare men? You know, keep your male laws off my body. A couple of thoughts. First of all, men, because they are members of the citizenry, elect representatives who then make laws for everybody. And sometimes those laws primarily affect women. Women, because they're members of the political community, elect leaders who then make laws that primarily affect men. That's the way our political system is set up. So this notion that men shouldn't have any say over what happens to women, I'm really not sure what people are advocating for here. And I say this a little bit in jest, but a little bit in seriousness, because it sort of seems like what they want is a completely separate legislative process for laws that affect the other gender. Like, only women would elect only female representatives in order to consider the laws that only affect women. Like, we're going to have the legislature with senators and representatives, and then we're going to have the womanlature, which has only females, only elected by females, and then all of the decisions about women only are going to fall to them. You know, one would imagine that we're also going to have a male legislature elected only, you know, only men will be able to vote. So we're going to have, like, the full-time legislature and then the part-time woman legislature and the male legislature, and they're going to each separately. I mean, like, seriously, what do you think would happen in order to figure out men only affecting men and women only affecting women? But also, if you look at it, men aren't the only ones who oppose abortion. There are lots of pro-life women, just like, by the way, there are lots of pro-choice and pro-abortion men. Lots of pro-abortion and pro-choice men. Because why? Well, a lot of men who would do things or like to do things that are going to make a woman pregnant when they don't want a child like abortion. So the notion that it's men who want to restrict and women who want to permit is just false. In fact, if you look at any of the national surveys on this, the difference between men and women on whether they want regulation, to what degree they want regulation or want no regulation at all, is actually pretty slim. The marginal difference between the two is actually pretty small. A couple of points, typically, 3 to 5 points. And typically, women are more permissive than men are. It's true. But you're talking about 3 or 4 percentage points out of 100. So the margin is not big. Meaning that this notion that men should keep their laws off of a woman's body, well, there's lots of women who want these laws on a woman's body. And so this argument about men and women in abortion is really a non-starter. It is a red herring. It's a lark. It's a distraction designed to make people feel extra guilty if they, you know, what, think as a man that they're supposed to have some interest in the matter of reproduction. But, of course, again, in our political system, there are all kinds of laws that, for example, white people make that black people have to live under, that black voters make, that white people have to live under, that property owners make, that non-property owners have to live under, that non-property owners make, that property owners have to live with, and so forth. We have a participative system where we elect representatives to represent on behalf of all of us to make laws that affect all of us. So, for example, non-smokers make laws that affect smokers. You say, well, that's fundamentally unfair. You can make the case, but again, two things. Number one, what alternate system would you provide? Are we really going to have the smokers legislature that only rules on smokers things, that's only elected by smokers? And is it going to be all the smokers? Is it only going to be the, you know, pack-a-day smokers plus? Is it going to be half a pack-a-day? As if you smoke once a month, do you qualify? I mean, when you really start to press on this notion of who gets to make which rules for which people, you run into really impossible technical challenges. There is something a little bit weird about people making rules that do not affect them. But the practical avoidance of that problem makes it so hard to do that it's not even possible to talk about. But number two, there's all kinds of laws like this. All kinds of laws. Pedestrians make laws about cars, or they elect legislative representatives who make laws about cars. And drivers elect legislatures that make laws about walkers. And so, just across the board, it's like this. So there's no solution to that problem. This problem, if it is one, is widespread. And unless you have another system of government that you're proposing, it's nonsense to say this. 437-1620. Again, pretty much everything that was said about this amendment was inaccurate. I appreciate the railings who showed up and talked about this. Anna Railing in particular is one of the families that had asked this of the Santa Rosa County Commission. Here's the weird thing. She got up and she refuted Stanley Gray, kind of like I've been doing. But then at the end of the meeting, they actually had a vote. And Sam Parker, the outgoing chairman, he's been replaced now as well, so he's not only not a chairman in a couple of weeks, but he won't be on the commission in a couple of weeks. He had pushed the topic to the back of the meeting, expecting there'd be a lot of conversation, because typically whenever abortion comes up in any context, there's always a lot of argument. So they pushed it all the way to the back of the meeting, and then when they got there, it was a giant, like, nothing.
Now, therefore, be it resolved, the Board of County Commissioners of Santa Rosa County, Florida, in a public meeting assembled expresses its opposition to Amendment 4. And I'd like to ask if there's any questions or comments from the board or the public on this issue. Seeing no other questions or comment, I would like to make a motion to approve this resolution, and I do so without objection.
All right, motion's approved. Thank you very much for bringing that forward to the board, and thank you, Railing family, for being here.
Like, nobody talked. The commissioners didn't talk. The opponents didn't talk. The advocates didn't talk. Nobody talked. They just passed it unanimously. So there's a declaration now that the commissioners of Santa Rosa County, Florida, in a public meeting assembled, expressed its opposition to Amendment Number 4. What does that carry for weight? Oh, nothing. It's all for show. But when governments express their views, that might theoretically, in some world that at least I don't live in, matter to somebody. So if there is a person in Santa Rosa County out of the 210-ish thousand people, not all of whom are, you know, eligible to vote, there might be that one person who was trying to decide whether to vote for or against Amendment Number 4, unclear in their own views about abortion or about what this language would imply, and thought to themselves, you know who I'll ask? I will ask the county commission. So for you, dear one person, that's what they decided. 526 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Moments like making my kids my famous meatballs mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that has spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR-positive, HER2-negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
Hello, this is Mary with Howard Young Flooring. Shopping for flooring can be a little overwhelming. At Howard Young Flooring, we are here to help you any way we can and answer any questions you may have so that you can make knowledgeable decisions. We understand the importance of each and every customer and would like to thank you for allowing us into your homes. For those we have not met, we hope to see you soon. Visit us today at 4333 Avalon Boulevard in Milton. We look forward to covering your future.
Hi, I'm Terrence A. Gross. As many of you know, I am a local board-certified personal injury lawyer, and I have practiced in this community for almost 40 years. Our law firm handles only people that have been injured due to the negligence of another. Join me this Wednesday at 10:30 on Pep Talk as we discuss all aspects of personal injury law.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Bands on the Beach, presented by the Santa Rosa Island Authority, tonight at 7 at the Gulfside Pavilion on Pensacola Beach. Bring a blanket or lawn chair and relax. Enjoy the beautiful sunset with your favorite bands. It's the Knee Deep Band, a high-energy variety show band with something to please all ages. It's Bands on the Beach, tonight at 7 with the Knee Deep Band.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, Pep Talk, mornings at 9, right after Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
You know, I noticed you've been drinking a lot of coffee lately. Well, I think that's why you have a hard time relaxing.
One of the greatest Van Halen songs ever. It does take a little bit of time to develop, and if you don't see a dancing donut, I'm not quite sure what to tell you. 529 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
Well, flooding from the remnants of Hurricane Helene has caused production to stop at one of the biggest manufacturers of IV bags in the United States. Officials at the Baxter North Cove facility, that's just about 30 miles from Asheville, North Carolina, said a nearby levee breach resulted in water getting into their building, which forced a halt in production of 1.5 million IV bags a day. The American Hospital Association is asking the Biden administration to declare the shortage of IV bags a national emergency.
Wow. Yeah, all of these little things that are crucial parts of the supply chain for all different kinds of endeavors, right? It all adds up.
It's
so wild. By the way, Hurricane Milton, not going to Milton, of course. Thank God. But Hurricane Milton yesterday reached Category 5, 180 miles an hour. It just so fast. It's slowed down now because it's getting interference in the Yucatan Peninsula, but 155 right now back to a Category 4.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. On its current track, Hurricane Milton will be the most powerful storm to hit Florida's Tampa Bay in more than 100 years tomorrow night, causing record storm surge.
That's that wall of water that will not be survivable if it is 10 to 15 feet above sea level. And this is what we are talking about for the Tampa area down towards Port Charlotte. We're going to see heavy rainfall. We're going to see prolonged hurricane force winds over this region. We're going to see a hurricane as well for Orlando and the east coast of Florida.
Fox meteorologist Janice Dean. Vice President Kamala Harris says Congress needs to act on illegal immigration, pressed on the subject by CBS 60 Minutes correspondent Bill Whitaker.
Was it a mistake to kind of allow that flood to happen in the first place?
I think the policies that we have been proposing are about fixing a problem, not promoting a problem.
America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. We've got 71 degrees right now. It is partly cloudy in Pensacola this morning. The Escambia Sheriff's Office says a man was shot on Pensacola Beach last night. That happened about 10:30 on Via de Luna and Fort Pickens Road. The man was flown to a hospital, but there's no current update on his condition. Investigators say the shooting stemmed from a domestic-related incident. The victim's wife was being questioned. An investigation into this incident continues. Hurricane Milton still heading towards Florida. Benji Heyer with the latest.
Milton is expected to make landfall in Florida by Wednesday night, hitting major population centers including Tampa and Orlando. Florida's officials are preparing for the largest evacuation there since 2017 when Hurricane Irma slammed into the state.
And in the latest update from the National Hurricane Center, Milton was classified as a Category 4 storm with maximum sustained winds of 155 miles per hour, just shy of being a Cat 5, which it was clocked earlier Monday with winds of 180 miles an hour. Counties along Florida's west coast have now been ordered to evacuate. Many of the evacuees are actually headed here to the Panhandle. Some are staying in hotels and campgrounds like the Gulf Pines KOA Holiday Campground in Santa Rosa County. Workers there expect that to be full by the time storm makes landfall. Mary Huggins manages the Best Western in Navarre, and she tells Channel 3 that she's also been fielding lots of calls from potential evacuees out of the Tampa Bay area. Well, a surprise development in the sale of OLF 8 last week. Local developers Chad Henderson and Ashton Hayward coming forward with a new offer for the entire 490-acre property. Commissioner Stephen Berry supported negotiating with their group. Commissioners Lumen May, Jeff Bergosh, Mike Kohler all agreed on selling the entire property. Ashley Hoffberger was sworn in as the District 4 County Commissioner yesterday.
With outlying filled, I mean, we've been working on that for years. There's been things on the table for months, and we're in the process of negotiating through those things. At the last meeting, they decided to move forward with selling the property as a whole, which I think is the best bet for the county. I mean, the Board of County Commissioners, we're not developers. We're not, you know, we're not contractors. We really need to be selling that piece of property to somebody that can manage all aspects of it.
And the Board of Commissioners had previously wanted to hold on to a chunk of that property to make sure it would be used to create jobs. Another developer has also gone rounds with the county on purchasing that property, Beulah Town Center LLC. They're also planning to submit a new offer for the entire property. There's two more county board meetings before some potentially major changes to the Board of County Commissioners after November's election. Former President Trump marking the one-year anniversary of the Hamas terrorist attacks on Israel yesterday. Trump made a pair of appearances to express solidarity with the Jewish people, beginning with a meeting in New York City with Orthodox Jews at a memorial event.
October 7th was not just the deadliest day for the Jewish people since the Holocaust. It was not just the worst terror attack since 9/11. It was an attack on humanity itself.
And then he traveled to a property near Miami for a remembrance event. It's 5:35 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
Plenty of sunshine today with temperatures warming up near 86 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 68. For Wednesday, another sunny day with a high near 85. Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 65 degrees. For Thursday, more sunshine, high near 82, low near 62. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. 71 in Pensacola, 70 in Gulf Breeze, 70 in Milton. Your next news at 6 and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Treasury yields were slightly lower this morning, reversing course after the 10-year hit its highest level in more than 2 months during the previous session. The 10-year Treasury yield was down by over 2 basis points at 3.998%, while the yield on the 2-year Treasury was 5 basis points lower at 3.949%. A new federal lawsuit alleges Sheetz, the convenience store chain in 7 states, used criminal background checks as a pretext for racial discrimination in hiring. The practice resulted in fewer blacks and other minorities with criminal records getting hired. Sheetz did not respond to a request for comment. Consumers now pay an average of 30.45% to carry a balance on store credit cards. That's according to a Bankrate survey. The highest annual percentage rate was 35.99%, and that is charged by companies such as Petco, Big Lots, and Michaels. Futures are mixed. That's Your Money Now.
I'm Robert Bender, your supervisor of elections. The general election is underway, and now is the time to make sure you have a say in this election. Election day is November 5th, and there are 3 ways you can vote. 1, you can request a vote by mail ballot and return it by mail or leave it in a secure ballot intake station at any early voting site. 2, you can vote early at any one of our 10 area early voting sites from October 21st through November 2nd. And 3, you can vote at your polling place on election day. Whatever you decide, just get out your vote.
For more information, visit escambiavotes.gov or call 850-595-3900.
Are you ready to experience healthcare that truly cares? At VIP Care, they're not just your primary care provider. They're your healthcare partner, specializing in primary care for adults 65 and older. VIP Care's compassionate doctors focus on prevention, creating personalized care plans to keep you healthy and active. With 4 convenient clinics in Pensacola, same-day appointments, and a dedicated on-call provider available 24/7, VIP Care makes healthcare easy and accessible. Visit getvipcare.com to find a clinic near you.
Tune in to Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC. Registered advisors.
It's that time of year again, hurricane season. News Radio 92.3 provides informative, local, and dependable coverage to make sure you're informed of any major storms coming to our area. Before a storm, we keep you informed of the storm's track, where food and gas shortages occur, and where you can get sandbags. During the storm, we stay on the air to let you know where the storm is headed, where power outages occur, road closures, and other storm warnings. Then after the storm, we get you the information to help you recover from the storm and help your neighbors. News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable hurricane headquarters.
Just a young gun with a quick fuse. I was uptight, wanna let loose. I was dreaming of bigger things and wanna leave my old life behind. Not a yes sir, not a follower. Fit the box,
good
the
morning, mold, have a seat. News Radio 92.3.
Take a number.
News Radio 92.3, I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. And yesterday we had a chance to talk to Ashley Hoffberger, who is the You know, I guess now sworn in. I didn't see a swearing-in ceremony, and I didn't check. I did check her Facebook page and didn't see anything, so I'm guessing it happened yesterday. Supposed to be the new county commissioner for District 4, appointed by the governor just 1 month out from the election. But we had a chance to talk with her about that. Ashley, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Okay with the Beyonce?
Yeah, that works. Well, it's upbeat, it's happy, it checks the boxes. Thank you.
Outstanding. Okay, so just let's talk a little bit about the mechanics. You're not the county commissioner yet, but you will be later today. Do we know what time that's going to happen?
Correct. We don't. So by the time the announcement came down on Friday, everyone had already left. So we didn't know what the judges' schedules looked like. So we're going to have to wait until this morning, until those dockets come out, to see who we can get to do the swearing in.
Okay, because it takes a judge to do it officially, and then you'll be an actual county commissioner. But as I understand it,
correct,
am I right about this, that like Sunshine already applies to you because you know you're going to be? Because I think if you win an election, even though you're not in office, it applies. Do I have that right, as far as you know?
Yes, so Sunshine kicked in Friday as soon as I found out.
Right. So no talking to the other commissioners offline. Your text, your emails, all the fun stuff that comes with being in Sunshine suddenly applies to you, right?
Correct. Yeah. So if you don't want it on a billboard, don't say it. Don't text it. Don't put it in an email.
That's exactly right. So I am curious kind of how we got here. How far ahead of the announcement did you know that the governor was going to appoint you?
So 30 minutes,
oh,
maybe.
Wow.
I know I talked to the governor's office and they, you know, confirmed a few things in my bio and said, okay, great, we're going to be doing a press release in about a half an hour. Obviously, I think there were some people who already knew. And so some of that had already went out to a few of the media outlets, because I was getting text messages like, hey, congratulations. I'm like, congratulations on what? So it was very exciting and very surprising Friday afternoon.
It's always good to be the last to know when it totally affects all of your life, right?
Right. Nothing like throwing a party you didn't know about.
Right. Now, I was personally kind of surprised by the timing, and I want to talk about that a little bit. And you may not know anything, and that's fine, but I had been of the opinion, of course, I've been screaming for us to get a county commissioner for District 4 since Robert Bender got pushed over to the Supervisor of Elections office in January. I mean, 10 months is a long time. I understood at a certain point that the governor wasn't going to get involved in it because it would look political to pick among the Republican alternatives. But I actually thought that after the primary, that he would nominate you or appoint you to fill out the term. And then, of course, you have an election still to win against Ron Helms in November.
Right.
Were you surprised by the timing? Did you have any ongoing communication with the governor about whether you would get appointed? Is there anything like that that would help us understand this particular choice of timing?
No, I'm a little surprised as well. Very thankful, but I thought it would have came right after the primary. So I was kind of expecting something within, you know, the first 2 weeks after the primaries. And then when we didn't hear anything, I thought, okay, so we're really just going to run straight through to November. And then Friday afternoon arrived, and here we are. So I had no prior communication, didn't know anything was coming down the pipeline. So just as surprised as everyone else, but I think it's really good timing as well. There's a lot of really important things coming up. Like you mentioned, District 4 hasn't had representation since February. So it is good timing, and I'm thankful to be in this position and really hit the ground running.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, this is one of the things that has been so frustrating because, you know, the governor's office has been very slow to make appointments. We had, of course, an ECUA vacancy a couple of years ago that was vacant for 10 or 11 months because it just, you know, like, they need representation, and especially when we have, you know, district, not countywide elections, the people of District 4, it's not that the county wasn't serving them, but it's different. I mean, if it weren't different, we wouldn't need representative government, right? So having the person they can call who is accountable to them and responsive to them, you know, regardless of whether you win in November, just having a person to fill out that seat is, I think, very essential. So that's a good news note. There's several things I want to ask you. You actually hinted at it, and that's one of the things I want to bring up. I think there's been a lot of speculation about why the governor made the selection a month before the election. And one of the most common speculations is that there are a lot of votes. And this board seems to be eager to rush into making massive decisions right before the bell, right before the curtain falls on Jeff Burgosh. possibly, of course, a change of seats coming District 5 with Stephen Berry. Who knows how that election is going to go? And I wanted to ask you your opinion about some of those issues and your sort of interest in seeing decisions made right away. So, Ashley, the first kind of, like, I don't know, 10,000-foot question is, how do you view your role coming into this board as the appointee for the next month, month and a half, until if you win the election, you would be the elected official?
Right. Great question. So the most important thing is making sure that I am working with other county commissioners to continue to move the community forward. There's quite a few things that are up for vote or we're in the process of negotiating. And I think it's really important that District 4 has a say in those things. There are some items that I ran on that I want to go on and get the ball rolling, you know, more resources for our first responders. Some of the things going on with EMS, I want to go on and start looking at that. And then just making sure that we are spending the money that we receive from the constituents in a responsible way. So all of those things, whether I'm elected in November or not, those things need to happen. So I'm comfortable starting that now.
Let's kind of work on that premise, because it's hard to imagine, you know, in a heavily Republican district with you and Ron Helms that you wouldn't win in November. But of course, anything can happen. But let's work on the premise that you're going to be the elected, you know, the elected official. So this is a 4 and a month or two term for you, not just a, you know, couple of month term. The one big vote that's going to maybe come up is the possibility of a $90 million sports complex along with the Bay Center. But encumbering that fifth cent for the next 30 years in a bond issue for $90 million, do you think that's a vote that should take place before the new board gets installed? Or is that a vote that should wait until after Steve Stroberger replaces Jeff Bergosh and whatever is going to happen in District 5 takes place? And District 4, frankly.
I would like to... Right. There's a lot of moving parts there, and we're looking at a huge changeover on the board, probably one of the biggest changeovers we've seen in a really long time. I think the responsible decision would be to wait until you have those new board members up and that they can all weigh in. I mean, you had people who chose to elect someone else to represent them and to make a decision that's going to wrap up so much money. I mean, honestly, I'll have grandkids by the time that thing's paid off. My little girl's 3 years old. So I think we need to wait until everyone has representation and those seats at the table have their voices heard. And I think that would be the most responsible thing to do. And I think most of the citizens would agree with that.
And I'm guessing, but this is why I want to ask, do you take the same opinion of the prospect of an OLF 8 contract coming forward? Because there's been a lot of very sudden eagerness, it seems, by particularly Stephen Berry and Lumen May to get something. It looks to all of us who are watching as if they are suddenly willing and eager to get something done before the curtain falls. And then lo and behold, here you are on the board. Do you also feel like OLF 8 is something that should wait until after the new board is installed?
So for OLF 8, I mean, that's been lingering for years. So that one's not a surprise. I feel like the sports complex just kind of came out of nowhere. We had a lot of people that were surprised or didn't know about it. And there was a lot of workings kind of in the background. And that really just came to the forefront of the public here recently. With Outlying Field, I mean, we've been working on that for years. There's been things on the table for months, and we're in the process of negotiating through those things. At the last meeting, they decided to move forward with selling the property as a whole, which I think is the best bet for the county. I mean, the Board of County Commissioners, we're not developers. We're not, you know, we're not contractors. We really need to be selling that piece of property to somebody that can manage all aspects of it. So I'm comfortable moving forward with the negotiations on that. Just the way commercial negotiations work, I would be absolutely shocked if there's a vote that goes into play before the new county commissioners are actually sworn in.
Well, your level of shock may be a little bit higher than mine, because I hate to be the pessimist about this board, but I see a 3-vote block that seems to be willing to try to do as much as possible before their power goes away. And so I actually am concerned, especially with Fred Hemmer's group. Not that they have to be the one to develop it, but it seems like the shifting terrain about, as you say, whether it's going to be the whole field or whether it's going to be part of the field, whether Escambia is going to retain a part of it or not. All of this seems to suddenly be in flux. And I guess my one request, if I'm a citizen asking you, is I would love to be sure that anybody who is willing to meet the new terms is given a chance to do so before any kind of a final decision is made. I can't imagine all of that process getting resolved before the new board gets in place. Do you kind of, that's kind of sounds like that's what you're saying, but I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Well, and I know, so at the last county commissioner meeting, there was a group that came forward and they actually put in an offer on the whole thing. And so that was being evaluated. And then I believe it was Stephen Berry that said, hey, we need to make sure that we've reached out to people who have given us prior offers and make sure we've kind of more or less changed the terms, right? Like we're playing a different game at this point. It's for the whole piece of property. So I do know that that was highlighted. I will say we need to confirm and make sure that those people were reached out to and let them know, like, hey, this is the new situation that we're looking at.
Right. And if there's, look, if there's a good offer, there's a good offer. But I particularly know there's been a dragging of the feet on Fred Hemmer. And, you know, it feels very much to me like personal favoritism to pick the one suddenly over the other one that's been working on this for more than a year. I'm just, you know, hoping that we get everybody who is willing a fair consideration, especially because, as you know, we all know the board composition is going
to
change.
Well, and I think what we need to do, so for me, the priority for that is, are we creating jobs? Is it the best use of the property? And is it going to provide an asset to the community? And so if you can say yes to all of those things, I think it makes sense to move forward in negotiating with that company or that team or whoever put that offer forward. But you're right. We need to give people the opportunity to bid on it and make sure that they're aware of the full situation.
You know, one of the things that obviously, because as you said, big shifts on the board, there's going to be a relatively predictable two-vote block with Mike Kohler and Steve Stroberger. At least that's the expectation. Whether if Stephen Berry wins, then Stephen and Luman always vote together, and so that wouldn't be a surprise. If Stephen loses, then you now have a third, you know, vote in Josh Roberson, who's a who knows what. But if it's a 2-2, suddenly Ashley Stroberger looks like the tiebreaker on a lot of things. How are you thinking about that power?
It's interesting, and I mean, it's exciting, but when I ran, I said, we're going to do what's best for the community, and I'm not going to do the whole team situation. And, you know, when I've sat down and I've talked with the other county commissioners, because prior to Friday, I could do that, it was, I believe we should be able to vote for what we believe is best. We should be able to give a clear and reasonable and respectable explanation of that and vote. And maybe I vote with you, maybe I vote against you, and then the next vote needs to be independent of that. There's 5 of us. We're never going to agree on everything, but we should respect where each other's coming from, and there should be a clear reason on why.
One thing that has been a sort of a persistent question in front of the, not really in front of the board, but the constituents have been bringing it up a lot, is the Finley JoJo and the development in that area. And I got to believe those people feel a great relief that they finally have a District 4 person to speak for them. Do you have an opinion about that project in that area, or are you still learning? Where are you at on that?
Yeah, so essentially it's about 22 acres between Finley and JoJo Drive. If you're not familiar with that, where that is, it's near Olive Road University area, and it backs up to Governor's Gate apartment complex. So there's been some proposed development that has been not been moved forward. And it is the reason that it doesn't really fit into the surrounding community. All of the proposed plans that have been sent out so far have been from third-party individuals, i.e. there's someone who owns that piece of property. Those people want to come in and buy it and develop it. So the actual owner of the property has not submitted any plans yet. I have spoke with him, and he wants to make sure that whatever goes in there is an asset and an amenity to the community, and it's something that really does fit in with the surrounding area. So I think that there's room for middle ground. The fact that there's 22 acres in the middle of town, and we talk about urban infill, and we talk about making housing attainable. The only way to make housing attainable is to put more housing on the market. So I think everyone is in agreement. Hey, we're going to put houses on those 22 acres. The question is, what does that look like, and how do you make that fit in with the current community?
I hope that the people who live there find that reassuring, that you've already been speaking with them, and you know that those are the kind of assurances we're looking for. That sounds like basically good news. Last thing I want to ask you, maybe it's the most obvious question of all, but I did save it for last. You're the first woman on the Escambia County Commission board for a long time. I was trying to think of, who is the most recent one. But is that important to you? Is that relevant to you? Is there any element of your approach to the board that's going to affect? How are you thinking about that the first female commissioner in a long time?
I mean, it's definitely exciting. And I think anytime we talk about diversity in a situation, it needs to be diversity in thought, not necessarily diversity in appearance or gender. Coming from a female perspective, I do believe we approach things in a little bit different way. So I think that anytime that you can have a different outlook on something or a different approach, and that brings some much needed diversity to a team, that's a benefit, right? So I think it is really, really exciting. I think it does set a great example for younger females in the community that are wanting to step up and maybe don't know how or haven't seen a path before. So that's exciting too. So I won't say that it is the top reason to vote for someone, but it is definitely something to consider. Like, hey, do we have somebody that thinks this way on our board, and would that be an asset to the team? So that part is really neat to take a step back and look at.
Well, we do have a history of extraordinarily capable and competent female commissioners in Escambia County, even though there have not been that many of them. The ones we've had have been very good. I hope you fit into that mold, and I certainly expect that you will. Congratulations on the appointment. We look forward to the swearing in later today. Obviously, the election upcoming in about a month, and that still has to be decided. But Ashley Hoffberger, the brand new county commissioner as of later today, thank you for the time, and again, congratulations.
Absolutely. Thank you. Have a great day.
And as I said before, I can't verify that she was. I meant to text her, and by the time I thought about it last night, I was like, oh, it's too late. So I'll have to check with her later this morning. I didn't see anything officially on the county that showed that she had actually been sworn in. There was no video of the event, and there was no announcement of a schedule for it. So I think she's the county commissioner. Oh, and by the way, I called her right in the middle. This is not fair, okay? I called her right in the middle. I called her Ashley Stroberger. Because we now are going to have Steve Stroberger and Ashley Hoffberger on the board at the same time. Man, we have name hazing in our area. It's terrible. Like, you know, the whole issue of Grover Robinson and Wilson Robertson being on the board. That's not right. Anyway, we'll take a quick break and be back in a minute. I'm Andrew McKay.
As a business owner, you have a lot on your plate. From managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, helping with COVID employee retention credits, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and their HR expertise. Avalon HR lets you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Avalon HR, employing made easy.
Serving overseas was just the beginning. We might be home from war, but our mission continues in communities all across the country. It's why we're out there in times of peace and crisis, providing meals to the hungry and supplies to the sick. It's why we're giving strength to those who are too weak and bringing resources to those without them. Service doesn't stop when we're done serving. It's what makes us the VFW. Learn more at vfw.org.
Hi, I'm Ron Helms, and I'm running to be your next county commissioner in District 4. I'm a long-term business owner, military veteran, and ordained clergy. As a fiscal conservative and Second Amendment supporter, I have a passion for public service with strong community engagement. As your next county commissioner, I will have a strong impact on crime and gun violence, affordable housing, and combating high insurance rates. I'm asking for your support and your vote on November 5th.
Paid for by Ron Helms, Democrat County Commission, District 4.
Hobbies can be fun and expensive. How about a hobby that's fun and could make you money? Find out how this Thursday morning at 10 with Emerald Coast Coins. Hear about precious metals and metal detectors as a great hobby. For nearly 20 years, Emerald Coast Coins has been one of the top-rated businesses in Northwest Florida to buy and sell gold, silver, and the best metal detectors to find treasure. Get more information about this Thursday morning on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
No matter how you listen, you can rely on News Radio Pensacola to keep you informed and safe when storms strike. You can listen on our mobile app.
Court ruling U.S. versus Fishbein, a man subjected to potential incineration while wearing another man's suit is entitled to $10,000 worth of airline tickets. It's an obscure ruling, but very important one to me.
Good Good morning, 5:59 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay, and no, I'm not Fletcher F. Fletcher. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, the White House says the federal government is ready to lend support as Hurricane Milton approaches Florida. The administration says FEMA does have the funding they need to respond to Milton as well as continue their ongoing recovery and rebuilding efforts after Helene.
Yeah, there's been so much misinformation about all the FEMA stuff. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Largely by people on my side of the aisle have been just outrageously misrepresenting the facts on this. Just
depend.